agenda items, I'd like to talk about the status of the current strategic plan, and again, our mission as a committee, and just kind of address some of those things.
Shall we do that at the?
At the end of the.
The end of the meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. So, review the fiscal year 2016-17, year-end financial report. Erin, it's you.
Good morning, how are you?
Good.
Haven't seen you guys in a while. So today, we're gonna just review basically the same information that we reviewed with the board last week. We usually, in May, present the draft preliminary budget for the next fiscal year, and then wait till the meeting the following month to vote on it. So it gives the board time to review it. So we're gonna go through that same information today. And so just to let you know, what we're going to do, we'll go a little bit around what's going on in the current year. The current year ends on June 30th, so we'll talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about the budget proposal for next year and go through revenues, expenditures, and each aspect of the budget for next year. So for the current year, we had originally budgeted $126.8 million. The revised expected revenues are $134 million. And it's basically, you know, with this capital project, if things shift 1 month, it shifts in and out of a fiscal year. And so some of it has to do with the prior year shifts leading to a higher fund balance, and then other things that we thought were going to happen shifting to the next year. And a lot of the revenues are driven by expenditures, so let's move on to that. The budget originally was $105 million. The year-end expenditures are anticipated to be $85 million. And a lot of that has to do with payments to Sumitomo, our vehicle manufacturer. You'll recall the last time we met, we walked you through the engine swap-out problem. Some of the other issues that we're working with are, you know, just connections to the PTC system. So those things just shift the payments and shifted acceptance dates. All the payments are tied to milestones. So those just all shift. We also had a little bit of a shift in the Larkspur activities. Bill will talk about that in his presentation. We had hoped a year ago to be able to execute the grant and move on to the construction phase a little bit earlier than we actually are, so that shifted a few of the expenditures. And then we had smaller savings, you know, maybe total of about $1 million in salary savings due to lack of hiring. We talked a little bit about that last time, that we are continuing to struggle with hiring qualified railroad people because of the cost of living. And then because of the shift in the startup, just fuel costs weren't as high as we thought they were going to be. So for next year, the 17-18 budget, which starts on July 1, we'll walk through these, but the budget includes ongoing and new capital project. It includes everything we believe we're going to need for passenger operations, and then everything we're going to need for administration. And rather than go through this slide, I'm going to move on because I have more detail on later slides on these topics. But first, let's just review the revenue for next year. We anticipate our total revenues will be $113 million. As we've talked about in the past, and specifically, Russ, your comment about a recession, we're seeing the end of that business cycle, at least in the last few quarters of sales tax. So I have projected only 2% growth next year because we're just not seeing the high growth that we had seen following a recession where we had 7% and all this awesome growth, and that's just sort of slowed down now. The revenues include funding for the Larkspur Extension Grant, not the whole project because it won't be done by the end of the fiscal year, but a significant portion of it. You'll recall we received $11 million for four new rail cars. The funding for progress payments on that is included. We start the fiscal year with a fund balance of $54 million. And then we've also budgeted for a combination of fare and parking revenue of $2.98 million. And that's a combination of what our models show around fare revenue. It's an estimate based on when we think we're going to start collecting full fares, which is after Labor Day, is right now what we have talked to the board about, that having, you know, summer be a half off price, that we'll start with a free service, then we'll have half off service, and then full fares will start in September. So it's based on calculations using those dates.
Annually, what would the fares, what your estimate be and projection be?
Our models are showing that the annual fare would be $4 million in the first year, so hopefully next year we would see that. And that's what we can talk about this a little bit about. It takes a while to get to normal, to figure out what those numbers are and to tweak things, and we can talk about that a little bit. So for the expenditures, the overview is that the proposed expenditures are $100 million. And in the budget document itself, you'll see it's broken up into three categories. The first is administration, which is $42 million, which sounds like a lot to administer a tiny agency, but really most of that is debt service, as well as we're required to do an appropriation for depreciation, even though that's not a cash expenditure. So if you take those two out, it's really a smaller chunk. And we'll go through the details on the next slide. Capital projects, things like Larkspur and the rail cars are $37 million, and operation expenditures are $21 million. And I have a little more detail on each of those. So for capital, it's basically what we just talked about. The $37 million includes pathway segments that are still in the process of being built. And I assume Bill will give you some detail on that.
Absolutely.
Final vehicle acceptance payments for the first seven sets. Some of those are going to take place after June 30th. We are anticipating constructing the Jennings Crossing that the City of Santa Rosa has asked us to build and will fund. There is a significant effort to design the next section of pathway that we hope to build, which is the Peyrand to South Point pathway, and we've secured a lot of funding to build that, but we haven't designed it yet. So we are using Measure M funds to design it, and that effort is kicking off, I think, this month. Obviously, we are planning on awarding the Larkspur Extension project very shortly. The four rail cars that I mentioned. And then in the capital category, we just have ongoing permitting and mitigation costs. You'll remember we bought that Miramonte Marina and are using that as a mitigation site for a lot of our projects. There are just ongoing costs of that. There's ongoing permit payments that seems like we're just going to pay forever. So. So in the administration budget itself, as we talked about, a big chunk of it is debt service and depreciation. But after you pay those two, or not pay, account for those, we have a new website that's going live, so there are expenses related to that. We have increasing IT expenditures. When you build a state-of-the-art brand new system, you have to have all those systems talk to each other. And it requires a lot of specialized knowledge, so there's a lot of expense in taking the five or six systems that we have and making them talk to each other. We have some funding allocated for emergency response should there be any sort of accident or event that needs significant expenditure. We also have a new code compliance officer. We had two part-time people, and now we will have three. And those people are spending most of their time right now walking and patrolling the right-of-way and trying to keep people safe from the railroad tracks. Part of it is homeless camp cleanup. Part of it is just educating people. Part of it is, you know, making sure whenever we get a call from a resident saying, hey, there's something going on your 43 miles right-of-way, they're doing a lot of work around that. We also will have another accountant. We will be doing clipper reconciliation. We'll be doing our fare machine reconciliation. We have a fare app, as we talked about. So there's a lot of, now that the revenue is coming in, that all needs to be reconciled on a pretty regular, if not daily, basis. We also hope to hire a deputy general manager next year to help the general manager. So that's all in the budget. The operations budget, direct operations, everything we do is for operations, but the direct expenses within the operations budget include the 79 staff that we've been talking about in the strategic plan since, you know, the 2014, spare parts, you know, we have to have everything available and ready should anything break so that service isn't interrupted. We have a contract with the Golden Gate Bridge District. I can't remember if we've talked about this. This may have happened since we last met. They have a pretty sophisticated customer service operation where they handle things like lost and found retrieval, requests for assistance, and they have a tracking system. And so we are actually going to contract with them to do a lot of our customer service. We're just trying it to see if it works, but they've got it kind of dialed in, and they're willing to do it for us. So we have a contract with them for that. It includes everything such as Wi-Fi, our connector buses between the North Station and the northern end and the southern end. We are executing contracts with Golden Gate for the Larkspur connection and Sonoma County Transit for the connection up to Cloverdale. Includes everything such as equipment like a rail scrubber and pathway maintenance equipment. Maintaining the pathway requires smaller vehicles than trucks, which is what we have for the rail. So we have a couple of small pieces of equipment to do that. You also may have heard about our smart ambassadors. We've now got most of them hired and ready to go. They are basically part-time people just wanting to help out, and they're going to be on the platforms assisting people, explaining to them how to use the Clipper machines, how to use the Clipper card, how to, you know, read the schedule, and just assisting. So that's what's included in the budget. As you can see, like most transit agency, a lot of it is salaries and benefits. The services and supplies are pretty significant because of these contracts, such as the, you know, Wi-Fi and the bus connections. Those are all contracts. So the fiscal reserves that we are anticipating for this year, we again have appropriated a contingency for, you know, fuel fluctuation. If there's an important piece of equipment that we are not anticipating right now, once we get into operation, we just assume there are going to be things that happen that we can't anticipate today. So we're appropriating $600,000 for that. This year we did the same thing, and we really only used it for the flooding problems that we had. We had some emergency expenses, and that's all that was used for. So it's really for urgent needs. We've increased our self-insurance retention, as we've talked about before. We have a $200 million liability policy, and there's just significant reserves that you need in order to manage that because of the self-insurance part of it. We are, this is consistent with our strategic plan, we're going to have an operations reserve fund of $17 million for emergencies, for if our fare revenue doesn't come in as we need, if there are, you know, if the sales tax doesn't come in at 2%, it comes in lower, that's a healthy reserve and around the level we had anticipated in our strategic plan. We are also within the expenditures of the operations budget. Have a deposit. We're setting up some people call it a sinking fund. It's really a reserve fund where we're going to start funding our equipment replacement needs on an annual basis. And that's going to be based on a schedule of the equipment that we own and its useful life. And we're still developing that. So this is just an initial deposit based on what we own today and what we know today. But that will progress over time. The idea is not to get 10 years down the road and realize you need to replace all your trucks and you haven't done it. And to have that funding there. And then finally, we are anticipating having a capital reserve of $10 million, which will go to a number of needs. The closeout of the current project, if we get to July and there are things just not working that we need to pay for, it's also needed for larger things that need fixing or replacing, such as, you know, there's a bridge problem or, you know, something bigger than that. It's designed for that. And it's also, as we enter the Larkspur project, although that is grant funded, as things happen, we need to have some funding set aside just in case things happen on that project. Although I'm sure that'll go swimmingly. And that's the overview. That's where we are.
Just a quick clarification. Yeah. When you're setting up the sinking fund for major equipment, that's the same stuff that you're also depreciating, right? So therefore, you kind of like you hit it twice. So in the old days, you're this
you
whole
would, you would match
be before
them.
Prior to right. depreciation for nonprofits that set up sinking funds, and that's
right.
how they set it up. But then now we're doing it like double hitting. We're doing depreciation and sinking funds. So interesting concept.
Yeah, it's a bit odd because the appropriation for depreciation is really more an accounting requirement and government.
In theory, that was supposed to be when we set up.
That's your sinking fund,
yeah.
Right? We are not putting $15 million into the sinking fund. So,
right.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a result of the way funding for transit works. Some of your bigger needs are going to be grant funded, and you wouldn't use your sinking fund for that. So if we had to replace a rail car, for example, we would start setting up a plan for getting grant funds for doing that. So this is really more your ongoing repair and replacement, whereas the depreciation is really the entire $500 million capital project, which you would not necessarily be able to fund in a sinking fund if you had to replace all that. And most of that, and the other issue is that a lot of that could last for 50 years. So that one's a little trickier.
Can I ask a question about that? I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but of the administrative budget, depreciation is a significant number.
Mm-hmm.
And in effect, does that become, it's not a sinking fund because you're not setting it up that
yeah.
way, but by budgeting it forward and then having a surplus, assuming that you don't do that, those repairs that year, does that become kind of like an informal reserve carried until we can figure out more and know what to do with it? Because that money's not going to be spent other
right.
than maybe some of the 525 or whatever.
So it's really an accounting entry because you're required under California state law to have an appropriation for that in order to record it in your financials. It doesn't. The reserves are net of that amount. That amount is just sort of subtracted from all of our. So it's really, frankly, just an accounting entry to show in our financial. It's really just designed to show what the value of our assets. That's its whole function.
Okay, but in terms of revenue being appropriated
yeah.
in the budget to that,
yeah.
it'll be presumably 99% of left over at the end of the year and carry forward that. So it is. It's not something that you're setting up a fund, but it is real money that's not going to be spent or spent.
It's not real money. It's really just an entry in the budget. Yeah, and it's not funded. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's confusing.
I have two questions.
Yes.
One is the reserves that you have for operations. Is that meant to be an ongoing figure set to be counted, or is there some sort of a goal that we have, or percentage perhaps of revenues that we're using as a metric, or how are you approaching that?
There's a couple of different ways to approach it. We were trying to replicate what we had in the strategic plan for now. When we sold bonds, one of the things that made the rating agency super happy was having a 50% reserve around the time you operate. And so that was kind of our goal, is so when the rating agencies show up, they can see that. On an ongoing basis, different entities use different ways to figure out what the reserve should be. Some people say you should have at least a 5, like Sonoma County, I think they're, a lot of governments, their policy is 5%, which to me is a little low. I would try to shoot. This is around 40%, including our debt service, which technically it doesn't rely on this reserve. We have a separate $17 million reserve that's a bond reserve that's held by the trustee.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, this is more than 50% of our operating costs, which is what the rating agencies like to see. So for now, that's what we were shooting for. On an ongoing basis, I think we'll talk about what our ongoing reserve should look like, because it's interesting to me, because from a financial perspective, I'm always let's have a super high reserve, but then you have this other school of thought that why are you sitting on so much money, right? So it's an interesting public discussion.
Well, when I was on the city council in Santa Rosa, I think we had 15% of general operating revenue.
Yeah, which I think is a good, healthy reserve.
Yeah.
I think Novato has a much higher one. So it's because I studied this back when we were doing strategic plan, kind of what is the universe, and it's kind of a broad universe.
Just one more question on employee benefits, anticipating retirements and what happens as the agency progresses in time. How is that being handled in terms of our budgeting?
So we talked a little bit about this last time. CalPERS, you fund retirements as you pay CalPERS every pay period. So every pay period we have a percentage we pay into that fund. And if CalPERS, if their actuarial calculations are good and if they make the money they're supposed to make, that should be all you ever pay, right? As we've seen,
in a perfect world.
Yes, as we have seen, it is not a perfect world. And like we talked about last time, what we've been focusing on the last couple of years was just implementing pension reform to try to get these pensions to a level that's fair and more closely funded. And right now, most of our employees are in the PEPRA tier, which is the pension reform tier, and there is basically no unfunded liability. As time goes on, as that should change, as CalPERS, every year there's an actuarial analysis, then we would look at that and we would look at setting up maybe some, I forget what they call them, but basically a pension reserve. At the moment, it's not a huge concern for us because our liability is very low.
Yeah.
But it's something we'll have to keep an eye on and something we'll monitor and see where it goes. Yeah, it's a problem. It's a problem for agencies that are old and established and haven't paid attention to this. We're lucky enough to be starting and seeing the mistakes of others. And it's going to be an ongoing problem, though, because part of what's going on with us is our labor shortage is making life difficult on us, and that just drives salaries, which drives pension. It's all connected.
Yeah, along that line, the engineer conductor salaries, given the experience that we've had to recruit and bring in, is that salary a little bit lower? It may be comparable to other places that aren't in the Bay Area, and it concerns me that we're not, budgeting enough per person.
Right.
So you got 21 positions, actually.
Right.
And they're the key people.
They
we
are
don't
the
have
key
them,
people.
We can't run.
Yeah, and we are looking at that right now. We did, in the last year, I forget, it was about 8 months ago or so.
I think it was around August.
August, yeah. We did go to the board and did a significant salary increase for them. I think it was 11% for one of the classes. Mm-hmm. We have two classes of people that are hard to recruit. That's one of them. The other one is the signal technicians. It's very difficult to find qualified signal people. So we are looking at that right now. We were close to being fully staffed, and then we lost some people. What's happening is that just the cost, as you guys know, the cost of living here is impossible if you don't already own a home or have secured housing. If you move here and you have to secure housing, not only the supply is just low and then the cost is high. So we have people who've moved here thinking, well, I can figure this out, and they just can't figure it out. So we're looking at that now. We also have three different bargaining units we're working with, so we are talking to them about that, or if we haven't been, we will be. So it's something that we are active. Literally just yesterday we had a meeting on this topic, so we're working on it. They are in line and higher than other places, but
the lines are different.
Yeah, and also just so you know, most of our operations staff have overtime in their schedule, and so their actual salary is at least 10% higher than this, because they all are getting at least 10% overtime. So it's, and that's a lot of what they calculate when they move and they take the job. They assume a certain amount of overtime, but it's a challenge, and we're working on it. And I agree, it's our number one issue right now. It's the It's driving our schedule. It's driving, you know, happiness, right? Because if people are working too much overtime, that's not good either.
Yeah. The second one I had was the new cars. It looks like we're buying some more new cars, other than
the seven
cars
we already
have. A, B, what are we talking?
Two A's and two B's, so two screen sets.
Are we going to have too many? We only have so much track. We can run more.
Can never have too many.
It'll also give us the cars for Windsor as well.
Okay, yeah. The other one is, this is looking ahead. Do we feel that we'll need more staff, et cetera, when we get to Larkspur? That's a couple of, a couple of years off, but are we
going to... Right now, we don't believe so. It's really just an extra couple of minutes in the schedule and the same number of trains,
we're just moving the terminus from downtown Center Bell 2 miles south, so the operation is very similar.
So we just have instead a little more track to maintain.
Instead of, say, a 20-minute layover in Center Bell, you've got an 17-minute layover in Larkspur.
So that'll all fit together.
A little more track to maintain.
More people sleeping on the track.
Hopefully that'll get rid of some of them.
Yeah.
But it's active down there now.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Just to follow up on Peter's question, that's a total of nine, as I just kind of made seven currently sets, train sets now, two more is nine. Back to memory of 2014 strategic plan, wasn't there 10?
No, you're thinking of 10 stations, maybe?
No, actually, it was train sets. Okay, somewhere in that section.
We we started with six, and then about 3 years ago, we received money for a seventh car set. SCTA helped us fund that. So that got us up to seven or 14 cars.
Yeah, there was somebody wrote in recently in the paper about an op-ed piece that said, we aren't getting what we're promised, and they referred to 10 train sets, and it's all after numbers. So I said, that must be true. And again, that's going to bring up my point later on about the strategic plan, just to refresh that, at least for me, if not the rest of the members of the board, where we're at, where we're planning on going, and in our original mission statement that we're supposed to be doing. So we'll follow up that later.
Hey, may I ask a question at this point?
To you.
Sure. My name is Will Nast. I'm just the resident of Petaluma. It seems like a lot of the points that you've been raising kind of tie together with startup of operations. And I've been wondering too about the two additional train sets that are online for acquisition. And I understand that those are being funded by grants. It's not.
Yes, but the state cap and trade funds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be, number one, sufficient staff to operate those? And number two, has the testing confirmed that the planned schedule is going to work so that the trains are bypassing each other north and south, and allowing the schedule to be met, or is there just simply a limitation that you can't run that many train sets at any one time? And maybe you'll get into that with the project update. But
generally speaking, we anticipate having enough staff when those trains arrive. Those additional two train sets won't be here until the end of 2018. They're not needed for the initial operating segment, so we think we'll have staffing available at that time. And yes, we are meeting. Our trains are meeting where we had hoped they'd meet, and we are running the schedule within a couple minutes of what we'd modeled, so we're pretty pleased with the results. So things are shaping up well.
And you're running four train sets right now?
Currently, we're modeling four train sets.
Okay. Yeah. And do you anticipate that the two additional are going to come online soon, or is that going to be sometime down the road?
You know, I think we're going to look at how the schedule works out. You know, it's going to be a learning curve for us. We'll see what the demand looks like. We'll see what the weekend demand looks like, if that's going to need some more service. And then we can start thinking about adding more trains. We kind of wanted to move into this with trying to achieve the schedule we promised, but would not over-promise and then have to back off of it.
Okay. But right now, the schedule that's out there that was released at the board meeting and subsequently revised is not meeting what was promised. There's gaps in the schedule.
Yeah, there. It may not align exactly with time slots. I believe it's as many or more train runs per day that was pr- promised, and maybe the hours on the ends are a little bit different. And again, you know, I think that's going to be dynamic and fluid. We've already tried to make some tweaks based on feedback we've had.
Understood. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Just to fill in a little bit of detail, there will be a discussion at our meeting next week with the board on the 7th. I believe the general manager is going to be talking a little bit about progress and where we are, and so we can pass that information along to you, or I would say keep an eye out for that. The other thing to understand is that it's I'm not involved, I'm watching it. It is a very difficult matching game between the meets that need to happen for the trains, the meets with the 5 or 6 transit agencies we're trying to coordinate with, and trying to get feedback on, you know, what is most important, a rigid 30-minute schedule, or trying to cluster your trains where you know your commute hours are going to be happening. And it's a constant, as Bill said, it's going to be a lot of ongoing tweaking as we go, and we're also evaluating. We won't know till we really get out there and start doing it and are able to say, well, gosh, nobody's riding this train, maybe we should. You know, and some of it has to do with you have to run trains south in order to get them north in the hours you want them to, and vice versa. And then all of those have to meet at the right time in the right place on our passing sidings. And so it's one of those things where you model it, but until you really go out there and do it, you just don't know. And everybody has an opinion, and they're all valid, and what we've relied on mostly is our transit partners. We've been just spending a ton of time with them, and so we'll see. We talked about this a little bit, where everybody we talk to who have done rail startups, and we have several people on our staff who have done that before, our operations manager, Dwayne Sayers, he said it's really going to be a year to 2 years before you really settle into, okay, this is our schedule, this is what we're running, this is where people want to ride it, and this is how we're going to deliver service. So it's really, you know, it's not going to be perfect on day one. It's not going to be perfect on month 6. It probably won't be perfect on year one. It'll never be perfect because you're living in a world of constraints. But we're working on it. So we hope to have more details soon.
Just a second to pull up this PowerPoint.
Exactly.
We're already we're doing the
Okay, so as we always do, a little bit of project update. I got a lot of photos of what we've completed, which is very exciting. I'll run you through a lot of the stations, vehicle shots. Things have really come together, and we're pretty much ready to run passengers from an infrastructure standpoint. Airport station at the northern end, this is one of our side platforms, the vehicle there, that would be the start of service heading southbound. Santa Rosa North center platform, so we have a section of double track there, our Santa Rosa siding. Downtown Santa Rosa, a nice shot of the station entrance. This is a track crossing to get to the center platform. It's our second center platform in the system, like the Guerneville or North Santa Rosa station. Whenever we have a pedestrian crossing like this, we've added pedestrian gates and then the swing exit gate. So should this gate come down and someone is in the track area, they have that exit gate to pass through. It's our standard we've adopted for all of our pedestrian crossings, whether they're at a station or by themselves somewhere. We would use the same type of configuration for the Jennings crossing in Santa Rosa. Heading down to Roner Park, single track station. This is probably our largest park and ride lot we constructed at this site. Cotati Station, two side platforms, again, section of double track through here. This really worked out nicely with the improvements that both the City of Cotati did and Sonoma County Transit with the intermodal parking lot area. That came together great, and we also had the bike path section, and I'll talk about bike paths in a little bit, that we constructed last fall from East Cotati Boulevard up to Golf Course. Petaluma Downtown at the historic depot. Again, side platform. We're adjacent to Lakeville here, so space is a little bit tight. And we are recently constructing some added parking down here in this bottom photo. This fronts on Washington, provides about 50 spaces. This is something the board asked us to do in January, so it's just a simple gravel lot, a little fencing along Washington and access through.
Is that permanent, that lot, or will it be built on or sold in connection with the McDowell thing?
I'm not sure what the status is of the property here. Oh. Ultimately, this would probably be part of that development, whatever happens there. Yep. Whether some parking is retained for SMART, I don't know. Okay. But that's part of the reason we didn't spend a lot of money on it.
Yeah, got it.
We did a similar gravel-type lot up at Airport as well, about 50 spots,
okay.
And that's under construction as we speak. San Marin, one of our second park-and-ride lots constructed here, a little bit smaller. We made the most of this site, and then this pathway here will tie to pathway leading down to Rush Creek towards downtown Novato, Highway 101 in the background. Hamilton Station. This is from Main Gate looking in towards the station. Nice size park and ride lot worked out well here. This is one of the unique station configurations in the system in that because of the topography, we don't have to ramp up to get onto the platform. It's just nice level boarding from the parking lot itself. Civic Center Station in San Rafael. This is the south end of the station. This is the section of pathway that we constructed as part of the station work. It ties to the recently reconstructed Civic Center Drive and the pathway work that the county and the city did there. And then hopefully in another month or so, we'll start construction on the rest of this pathway that will tie to San Pedro Road. And finally, downtown Santa Fe, you can see the bumping post and the rail that's ready to launch for the Larkspur extension. Two side platforms here. This will be a point where we meet. You can see the terracotta colored shelters that Santa Fe chose. And these platforms have access from both ends, both 3rd Street and 4th Street. Probably our tightest, most congested area in the system. Clipper, good shot of a Clipper machine. All the ticket vending machines have been installed now. We have one ticket vending machine at each platform. They're typically tucked under the end of the shelter like this. We've extended the roofs on those to provide shelter. The ticket vending machines, you can purchase a ticket, you can add value to your ticket, you can do it with cash, you can do it with a credit card, and then of course set them up with an online payment or reloading. Like a fast track type system. The other thing I don't think I have a photo of, but should mention, we do have bike lockers. The first deployment of those will be going in, I think starting tomorrow or Monday, at our stations, and we should have all those in place by the time we're ready to start service. So a little bit on pathways. I've got a handout for you.
Can
get one to the gentleman. So hopefully this is a very familiar document. If you recall, we included this in the strategic plan in 2014 when we updated it. So what we've done with this map, and this is on our website, I just pulled it off last night. We've taken the strategic plan map, and it's kind of our master plan for the pathway segments. It shows pathway segments that we plan to build, pathway segments that are on adjacent streets or in adjacent communities, and then we've highlighted it with what has been constructed either by us, by others, and what is planned for construction and what might be in design. I've got some words on the screen that kind of annotate what we've been working on this past year that ties directly to this. You can study this in your free time. If you have any questions, I'm happy to delve into the details. But in big picture, we constructed a fair amount of pathway last fall before we got rained out in October. Groomville College was a nice connection that tied nicely to the work that the city of Santa Rosa had done. They previously built 8th to College. We fit in 8th to 6th, 4th to 3rd, and then the city had previously built Hearn to Bellevue, or Hearn to, and the county was in there as well for Hearn to Joe Rendota. So we're starting to get a really nice continuous section of pathway in Santa Rosa. Yes, Steve?
Hi. The connection between the creek where the Rendota Trail comes in, Prince Memorial Greenway, 2/3 Street, I'm not clear exactly. What is that, a path that is in planning now?
There's a small gap there,
yeah.
And it's really waiting on what happens to the Railroad Square development. We didn't want to build a piece of path that was going to put people on 3rd Street without a safe path of travel across 3rd Street. Going back many years when the previous developer had plans there, he was going to build an intersection that would access that development and would have had a crosswalk with it, and we would have that connection to get across 3rd Street.
Until
something materializes, we're not comfortable just putting people right up to 3rd Street.
Yeah, I understand. Is that right away owned by SMART in that area? So it's not a private landowner that owns that?
Yeah, our right away is continuous up to 3rd Street from the south.
Great, thank you.
Good question. The other big chunk of pathway we did was from East Cotati up to Golf Course in Roner Park. We also partnered with Sonoma Mountain Village last year, and they have funded a portion of path in the SMART right-of-way from the Cotati Station to Sonoma Mountain Village, at which point the path would get onto their property and get all the way down to Railroad Avenue. So we're getting a nice chunk in the Roner Park-Cotati area as well. We started construction in October, hoping to fit it in before the rains came, but we got rained out, and the clay soil in Cotati just brought us to a halt, literally. Coming up this year, we've got permits in place for San Pedro Civic Center Drive. I hope to start that work in June or July, so this month or next month. That's a really nice connection piece. We've got permits pending with a couple agencies for two sections in Novato, Franklin to Grant, that makes the downtown station connection, and then Rush Creek up to the North Novato station. I mentioned the Cotati section, and then Aaron touched on Petaluma. We'll be starting design. We're hoping to award a contract for a design consultant for that section from Payrin to South Point. That goes across the upper stretch of Petaluma River at the Cinnabar Ridge. And we have full construction funding for that. It's in out years of like 1920, but I think our grants group is working to move that money sooner so we can construct that sooner. So we're pushing ahead with design, get it shovel ready, get the permit process going so we're ready to go. And that's down there on the bottom. Todd to Golf Course would be the last big section, you can see it on the maps, that would connect that Santa Rosa piece of pathway to the Roner Park Cotati pathway. We don't have funding for it. It's a little bit of an expensive segment because it goes right through tiger salamander habitat, so we've got a lot of mitigation to purchase there for that segment. So that's kind of big picture on pathways.
Thank you for the map, by the way. It's very helpful.
Yeah, we tried to really annotate it with simple colors to kind of get it to stand out, and you start to get a flavor of where the continuous sections are and what we need to focus on next. I think I touched on these other segments in my discussion. And then just a few photos. This was right after we did the pathway from College to Guerneville last fall. It's got the separation fence, which is our typical detail from the track. Santa Rosa was a little tight, especially getting in around the railroad equipment here. We actually had to do some relocation of a lot of stuff to make this fit, but it is an important section of pathway that sees a lot of traffic. Hearn to Bellevue, this is before the pathway, before the fence went in, just after it was paved. And then some of the crossing details that we've been doing. Golf course to Verona Park, this was done last summer, really went well. They're setting one of the bridges here. We had two of these prefab bridges that went in. They did them both in one day. It was very impressive. They made it look super easy. Okay. Roner Park, this is on the opposite side of the station. That's that same section of pathway. Kind of get an aerial shot here. Makes a really nice connection in Roner Park to the station, and even would link to Sonoma State at Roner Park Expressway. That's it. The only couple other things I wanted to touch on. Larkspur, I don't have any slides for you. In general, we've been spending a lot of time working with our partners, especially City of Santa Fe and Golden Gate Transit. We worked through some of the challenges there with the Teeny Transit Center, the impacts that SMART will have in displacing the boarding platform C. And we were able to come up with a reconfiguration that accommodates all the current bus movement, keeps them within the transit center, and thereby appeasing Santa Fe's concerns of introducing additional traffic and buses and eliminating parking streets. So that was a big push earlier this year. We've executed MOUs with both those entities, Santa Fe and Golden Gate Transit, on the transit center on how we're going to work with Santa Fe. Santa Fe is leading the effort on the Anderson Drive crossing. They're working with CPUC. Their application is in for that grade crossing there. And they've asked us to construct that work, so we've included it with our civil design build contract. We're well into procurement on that contract and hope to award that in the next couple months. So we're trying to get some in-water work accomplished this season before that window closes. Otherwise, we'll lose a significant amount of time for the Larkspur extension. And then permitting, of course, working with the Army Corps of Engineers, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife on getting our permits lined up. So that's kind of Larkspur in a nutshell.
And the funding on that again, because that's always the mystery.
Funding on Larkspur?
Yeah, that $20 million that they keep.
We have a
in and out or in. Yes, we have it. No, we don't. Maybe.
We have a fully funded funding package for Larkspur.
Okay.
$48 million. $20 million of that is the FTA Small Starts program.
Right.
That money was in the congressional budget two cycles ago, so it's been appropriated, and we're in the process of working with the FTA to get the actual grant for that money. So we're told it's secure, it was appropriated. We just need to get that grant to lock it up. Then we have the regional money, $20 million, which is $13 million in RM2 funding, a little bit of CMAC, so federal funding that's coming through the region. We got $3 million in PTC money from the Federal Railroad Administration, and a little bit of FHWA money for the modifications to the transit center. Yes,
Peter? Yeah, are we going to have a storage track in the Larkspur?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can store trains if we're not
We'll have a center platform down in Larkspur, so track on each side, room for 2 3-car trains, and then we'll have room for a 3-car train beyond the platform.
That's
so
wide,
one storage
wide, right, right.
Yeah.
The other one, just more of a comment, downtown San Rafael is really going to be interesting when it starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Aside from whacking people in the crosswalks, the traffic congestion. I mean, I've talked to people who said,
well, I'm going to do all my stuff at night because I can't get across. You know, so it's people are very, very concerned. But
yeah, and I think that reflects the fact that it already is really congested there.
Yeah, it's terrible.
The train's not going to be passing constantly, so no, I'm not sure it's going to make that huge a difference,
right.
But the perception piece is huge.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. I think that once it starts, people go, oh, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Maybe you can explain the preemption equipment that you've put in there.
We've been working closely with the city, and they've actually redone all the traffic signalings, the traffic signal controllers within like a 8-block radius that all ties together now. They've put some upstream, what they call Q-cutter signals, which are really just advanced signals, which stop traffic to try and prevent those cues on the track. They've got some of those up at Mission.
And the big sign that says, don't go through the...
That's just sort of an additional safety.
That's just additional.
Really, yeah. The Q-cutters is a fancy name for an upstream signal. So when the train's coming, it sends to the traffic controller.
Yeah.
It brings this signal red, so you start holding that flow of traffic before it gets to the tracks to prevent the backup.
Good idea.
What is the estimated date for Larkspur to actually have service?
We're pushing for late 2018 right now.
Yeah.
It's gonna, you know, we've slowed down a little bit. I think Gary mentioned that earlier. We had a little more challenges getting through Santa Fe and the transit center than we expected. We don't have our grant agreement yet from the FTA, but we're working very closely with them on that. So, you know, everything's taking a little more heavy lifting.
What if Anderson goes south with CPUC?
Then Santa Fe's going to have a problem.
I think it's only a $20 million overpass or something.
You know, I think we're in good shape with CPUC.
Think so.
They've submitted their application. It goes through a 30-day comment period. It closed without any comments or protests of any sort.
Oh, okay.
So that's a very significant milestone.
Yeah.
So we should be in good shape there, both us and the city.
Good.
So since we're on the subject of timing, I'll ask the question, I guess.
No,
I'll
ask it.
When are you anticipating the start?
Our general manager says, I used to say soon, and now I say very soon.
Late spring.
Oh, relative.
That's right, it's relative.
What has to happen between now and that date?
So we've been running the schedule with the trains every day. That's been going well. People are trained. The last piece is really getting approval from the Federal Railroad Administration. They're going to be on site doing an inspection in 2 weeks. So that'll be a significant milestone.
That's the major hurdle?
It's kind of the last hurdle, yeah.
But do they say that day, or do they go back to D.C. and take 6 weeks to write a report?
I don't believe that there's a six-week period in there,
so
but I'm not sure they're going to tell us that day
that
as they
day.
Walk off the property.
Okay, it's going to be real close together.
Yeah.
You're going to know a lot more on that day, at the end of that day.
And we have a very good relationship with the FRA and the CPC. We've been meeting with them for years.
Yeah.
You know, telling them what's coming up, what we're doing, what we're working on, because we found that's the best way to work with them.
They want a success, too. You know, they want us to succeed, I'm sure.
They do, absolutely.
People are, I mean, all over the country, people are watching us.
Yes.
Because we are new, exciting PTC. I mean, everything we are doing, you can't imagine how excited people are. Everywhere, you know, when we go to meetings or Farhad goes to D.C., everybody's like, oh, when are you guys, you know, aren't you coming out with PTC? And so people are rooting for us, I would say, and can't wait to see because it's all of these new the new world of PTC. People are still trying to navigate it. It's not one thing that everybody knows how to do. Everybody has their own way of doing it, and the Railroad Administration, you know, has shifting sands on when everybody has to be ready, and so it's a fascinating new world for commuter rail.
Well, the Northwest, whatever, the little train that can, that has as part of the PTC system too, their locomotive.
Yes.
Yes.
TriMet?
They will be, no, the Northwoods and Pacific.
Whatever.
NWP, yes, they, we, yes.
They're part of it.
We've outfitted them with PTC equipment.
Okay, the other question is, have we learned anything more from Toronto's experiences with these cars, trains? Aren't they, they're in Toronto, aren't they?
Yes, the same vehicles are in Metrolinx on that airport.
Because they've been running for a while.
Yeah.
Have they found out anything that's useful?
The engines was the biggest piece, and that's where they had that catastrophic failure.
Okay, that's right.
Actually, the engine burned up.
Oh, okay.
But I know our vehicle maintenance manager is in contact with them.
Okay.
You know, they compare notes.
Yeah.
One agency to another.
Okay, just back to Steve's unfinished question about, so if one was betting and we said, you know, it's going to be late spring and today being June 1st and 21st, I think it's still summer. Do we think we're going to make those odds, or do we think we're going to maybe still close horseshoes type thing?
I can leave the room if you want.
That's fine.
Yeah. It's all public. For the record, I'm not a reporter.
Thank you for that. You know, I think the general manager plans to make an announcement at the board meeting next week that he's going to hold up at the Rail Operations Center in Santa Rosa.
It's going to be like Trump at noon today.
I honestly don't know exactly what that announcement's going to be. I mean, again, it really comes back to the FRA. It's very dynamic and fluid with them, but we're making good progress.
Fair enough.
The whole thing's going to be
Very soon.
Soon, yeah.
Very, very soon.
Hopefully it was
very
soon. Yeah, just that, again, the people that have been negative onto the project all the way through are just, you know, that's the hammer they keep putting down on us all the time. It hasn't been delivered, and we'd just like to get over that hurdle and go on to the next thing where they'll be complaining about. So. Yeah, and again, it's the timing, it's the tweaking. There's going to be someone who does something silly on one of those tracks, yeah. And it's all going to be those things that we know are going to come up, and it's move on. So.
Yes, we would like to be out there today.
I know.
It's a complicated world.
Yes, it is.
I was talking to someone from a transit agency, and I said, imagine if you're responsible not only for designing, buying the bus, but also laying the road, putting in the traffic signal. You know, it's just every aspect of it is our responsibility. You know, it's not like just throwing a car on the road and letting it run.
And I really think that the one of the biggest issues that I hope people can deal with is kind of the other end of the line when you get off the train to get to your place of employment or wherever you're going. And that's the challenge of it, because it's not necessarily in place.
Right.
You know, we're doing our own, but others kind of have to do things to get there. If it's employees and moving, how do you get them to their offices, to their place of work?
So you'll meet the trains with the van.
That's great.
One of the things that we're planning too is once we are up and running, we have a planner who's working basically full time on passenger surveys and other types of surveys. So one of the nice things about operating is you actually can start talking to people. You know, does this schedule work for you? How do you get to your job? What would make it easier to get to your job? You know, and so. Once we get up and running, we can start doing it. Right now, it's a little bit harder. We've been talking to employers mostly because those are the people that are going to be, hopefully their employees are going to be riding our train. So, for example, County of Marin, their survey said 1,000 people from the County of Marin want to ride the train. So we've been having those connections with those employers to try to work on the schedule, and some of the scheduling discussions that have been in the public have been, you know, as we've daylighted things and then gotten feedback and then we're tweaking them. And so having riders on the train will allow us to figure out what are those connections that aren't working, and then working with the transit operators, because it's easier for them to adjust their schedule than it is for us to adjust ours. So it'll be interesting to see, because in all of these discussions you can
we can tweak our schedule that will help out, for example, Golden Gate Transit, but it may not work for Petaluma Transit, right? So everywhere along the line, people are going to be adjusting as we go, and more information will definitely help us with that.
Again, back to the first and last mile, mm-hmm. we had presentations, either this or at SCTA, about those various transit people. And like at the airport, the last time I heard from the county, there was one that's going to be a circular route over 30 minutes that's going to hit the station to the airport and everything else. And I was at another meeting last week and said, oh, no, it's only going to come every hour or 2 hours, whatever. And I'm okay, there must either be a change or something's happened since the last time we met with. So, again, that's all, again, very important to see with each one of these transit operators that they've actually adjusted it from the last time they made a presentation to this committee or whatever, or so we understand that a little bit better. And I know it's a moving target. And as it relates to employers, at least in Santa Rosa and that area, it's one where they're still waiting for the start date. They keep talking about contracting with the, you know, outside service,
right.
Maybe not, maybe doing this. And the Coyote, is that the name of it? There's an outside service that actually is going to have a van or a bus fleet that will do that, and they all combine. And so there's a lot of things that are out there that are not firm and concrete until the start date is set. And I think
everyone's Right. Yeah, and I think one of the reasons we proposed the 50% off period during the summer was knowing that it's not going to really be perfect, and giving people that sense of this is just, we're just starting, so get on, try it, see what you think, and it allows them a chance to kind of give us the feedback. Well, I can't ride it because there's no bus, you know, or I can ride it, but only if the bus runs this often, you know. And so, and Sonoma, I would say Sonoma County Transit has been phenomenal at working with us and trying to figure out ways to get the connections to work between us, those employers, the airport, the county buildings where a lot of people work. So, I would say it's a really strong partnership, that, and there are weekly meetings and, you know, phone calls, and it's the summer is when we hope to kind of get out there and just getting running will help us figure those things out. Yeah, it's a phenomenal area for jobs up there.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Yeah.
So, but that's the opposite of what for years had been planned, right? For years, it was really, how do we get people in the morning down to Marin and in the evening up to Sonoma? And now it's, I mean, that's a different wrinkle, right? And how do you adjust for that?
I just think about students from Sonoma State to downtown Santa Rosa or to the JC to this, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that factor has never even been thrown into the mix of the equation. So anyway,
yeah.
All those opportunities. I guess the other point that I was going to just bring up is that is the strategic plan. I think the last time we did it is 2014.
Right.
And I would really like at our next meeting is to focus on that. I don't know what the plans are, and I don't know if there is any kind of formalized plans to how do we go from, you know, the airport to Windsor North. What are, do we have a game plan? Are we just kind of looking out and how do we address the first and last mile? How do we, you know, all those little things that are there. At least just talk about it in generalities and think about what's going on. And I think a lot of things have happened since 2014 that have changed within our mm-hmm. plan mm-hmm. that we might want to talk about mm-hmm. and maybe have a meeting sooner than 6 months like the last one to talk about that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe after 60 days of operations with the actual operations that we have some kind of ridership numbers at least.
Right.
To talk about something like those mm-hmm. and to see where that fits within the strategic plans. That's mm-hmm. really our mission and our focus that we're supposed to have.
So I would say if we could meet late October, early November, under the assumption that we'll be doing full fares and full, you know, our full service starting in September. So that would give us some time to work through that. It also, coincidentally, I will have finished the the audit, so we can talk about that. And that, you know, that'd be a good time to check in, and we can put kind of strategic plan planning on the agenda for that meeting. That makes sense. I think that we were talking about, I think it's supposed to be a 5-year plan, which would be 2019. And I think, you know, shooting for that and is a realistic goal. I think what we would like to see ideally is to get a full year of operations in, to see what our ridership is, see what our expenses are, because that allows you a couple things. It allows you to start talking about long-term sustainability of the agency. Are the revenues coming in as we thought? Are the fares coming in as we thought? And it also, you need that in order to plan to go to Windsor and to plan to go to Cloverdale, because you have to know what your real operating costs are before you can, I mean, you don't want to build the extensions and not be able to operate them, right? So you have to know both of those things. The other thing that's changing right now that hopefully we'll have more detail on is, I don't know if you heard about this, SB1 that passed at the legislature, increasing the diesel tax and creating funding for transit that did not exist before. They created a new pool of funds for commuter rail that we're going to benefit from. So hopefully by then we'll have a little better information on what that's going to look like, and that'll help us a lot. It also creates a bigger funding pool for capital projects. I mean, I think the state of California, assuming that, you know, the challenge to legislation is defeated, I'm not up on the politics of that, but to me that's very exciting, and that's how we're going to go north. I don't see the federal government funding anything, at least in the next couple of years. So I think maybe by then we'll at least be able to report to you, here are some things we're looking at for Windsor and going north. I think it's a good time to live in the state of California, right? It's not a good time to be in a lot of other places. So as far as transit funding goes. We never have had a dedicated funding source from the state before, so it's very exciting for us to share a pool with three other agencies.
Maybe they'll start directing the funds to transfer to commuter lines instead of state long trains.
Maybe. I'm not going to touch that.
I didn't mean that's a third rail, as they say.
I support all trains.
Right. Faster the better.
Faster
nice
the better.
To get the commuter trains in place.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it would. I mean, and you know, talking to the state of California, they're saying, gosh, we'd really like to get you along Highway 37. We'd really like to connect you to the rest of the, you know, so that you could take a train to Sacramento. You could, you know. So, I mean, there are big plans at the state level and lots of enthusiasm. Our contacts at the state, you know, the Brian Kelly, the Secretary of Transportation, is very invested in our success and where can we go next. So there's a lot of positive things happening. So do you want to pick a day? How about November 2nd? Is that, or the 9th, 2nd, the 9th, one of those guys?
November 2nd?
Mm-hmm. Or the 9th, whatever works. No? 9th? Whenever Russ says shoot, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, right, yeah, we have a. The 9th is November 9th works for me, but not everyone else.
Does that work for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. And as I understand it, I mean, that'd be too early to do a draft strategic plan or something, but we'll talk about concepts and things that'll change and where we're going, kind of overview of it at that meeting. Is that
fun?
I mean, because I wouldn't think you'd have a draft of it, you know, a couple of years before it's going to be approved. Yeah. We would expect that.
I think we would just talk about what the timing and the schedule would be, and one of the, you know, I think it's a year. It would be a year long staff effort on our part. We'd want to work on other aspects of capital planning so that our numbers were inclusive.
Cool. I want to make sure we also talk about this first mile, last mile topic. We get a status report on not only transit connections, but parking and bike paths again, and, you know, just give a little more update on how well our customers are actually going to be able to get to and from the system, and what you're finding with your survey as well.
We could bring someone from planning,
yeah.
Our giant planning department of one.
Good luck in making
the show.
That's a real good service. Very, very.